You know what I love about baseball? There's a game every single day. That's not a complaint. That's a gift. And right now you've got playoff basketball and playoff hockey running alongside the everyday of baseball. That's not a sports calendar, my friends. That's a buffet. MyBookie.ag has all of it. And if you're new, here's the deal. Use promo code ZABE on your first deposit. First bet loses, they give you the money back, up to $500 in free play. Plus $25 in casino credit just for signing up. One rollover, that's it. MyBookie.ag, promo code ZABE. Check the site for offer details and to confirm availability in your state. Bet smart, get paid. Now, go find a game. All right, quick word about Troll Co. Clothing. Here's what I actually love about this brand. It was started by two guys who worked the oil patch. Not marketers, not guys with corporate pitch decks. Workers. They looked around and could not find any clothing that represented the life they were living. So they made it themselves. Workwear, tees, hoodies, hats. Good quality stuff. The whole brand is built around a phrase you have probably heard. Dirty hands, clean money. The idea that hard, honest work is how you build a good life. And I think most people listening to this show understand that better than they're ever given credit for by the sports media machine. So if you want your gear from a brand that actually means something and was not assembled by a focus group, go check them out. Trollco.com/Zabe. That's TROLLCO.com/Zabe. And use code ZABE25 for 25% off your first order.
This is the ZABEcast, hosted by a Pop-Tart loving kid from the mean streets of McLean, Virginia. And since you probably have other, more important podcasts to waste your time on, screw those AirPods in tight and let's go.
Here we go. Thursday, June 4th, 2026. Thank you for downloading. It is you and me today on the ZABEcast. And as you listen to this episode, you will hear nothing about game one of the NBA Finals. However, I am here to tell you, because I'm recording this, by the way, before tip-off, so I can watch the game and focus on, okay, what's happening here and how's it going, and then I'll report back tomorrow. If you're a subscriber, you're a one percenter, and have the Friday edition of the ZABEcast with Scott Lynn and Steve Solomon. But I'm not here to tell you about the finals and what happened tonight, but I do have a story for you on how the NBA Finals got their name. And I know you're going to say, it's the dumbest thing ever. What do you mean, how they got their name? Their name is the NBA Finals. Nobody gave the NBA Championship Series their name. It's always been, but that's where you're wrong. It has not always been the NBA Finals. And the logo you will see on the court tonight, or that you saw last night, I should say, the script F, is also something that was relatively new. David Aldridge, writing for The Athletic in a non-paywalled article, thank you very much for that, David, although I am a subscriber, he writes about the NBA's script F logo and how the name came about some 40 years later. He writes, this is a story about the NBA and the logo. No, not that logo. That would be Dribbling Man, as he is called in the industry, or the Jerry West logo, even though there is some debate and argument over did they really model the NBA Dribbling Man logo after the silhouette of Jerry West. This logo, writes Aldridge, is the one the NBA uses to announce the league's championship series has arrived. The NBA Finals logo, the script F, and the shooting star over the eye in finals, made its debut in 1986 when the Celtics met the Rockets for the championship. 40 years later, a slightly different version has the script logo. Of the script logo will adorn the court at Frostbank Center on Wednesday night when the Spurs and Knicks tip off game one of the 2026 finals. The script F has become, says Aldridge, has become known as the championship series logo as the Larry O'Brien trophy also returns to center court. This for the first time since 2009. It'll also be at center court for Madison Square Garden when the series moves to New York for games 3 and 4. He writes, like the Larry O'Brien Trophy, the Script F logo means one thing. You're playing for the ring. What other reason is there to do this every year? It means you've arrived as a team or as a star player. You can put up all the numbers you want during the regular season, but if you don't walk out onto the Script F Larry O'Brien court, well, then you're not in the most rarefied of air, where the best of the best have played. Karl Anthony Towns said, it means a lot because for my career, I've only been able to see the finals logo on TV. It means a lot to be the person that sees the logo on their jersey and has this opportunity. The word grateful is all I can say. Well, isn't that a nice perspective? Of course, back in the 80s, when the NBA was still trying to come out of its sort of sporting purgatory, by now you've heard me and others explain that the NBA was considered a drug-addled league that had rampant brawling and fights. The movie Semi-Pro with Will Ferrell was not that far off, necessarily, from how the NBA was viewed. And it took both David Stern, along with the influx of these stars like Bird and Magic and Hakeem and Barkley and Ewing and others to propel the league to its current status. CBS had the league's broadcast rights in the early 80s. They called it the NBA World Championship Series. That didn't exactly roll off the tongue like Super Bowl or World Series or Stanley Cup. Even the NCAA had started using the catchy nickname for its championship weekend, the Final Four. That was in 1978. Each one of those, says Aldridge, was evocative, each one hearkening back to memorable plays and moments. The NBA's version of what the World Championship Series was, as advocates of FIBA and other international governing bodies for the sport made clear to NBA leadership, was not the same. Desperate to create some buzz, somebody at NBA HQ said, I got an idea. Let's call the Sixers-Lakers NBA Championship Series Showdown 82. What? This is something I didn't know until I was today years old and read this piece by Aldridge. It had a logo and everything, and it made the NBA championship look like a cheesy, made-up event that would run on ESPN The Ocho, writes Aldridge. Coming up after the Great Eastern Skeet Shooting Championships, it's Showdown 82. I'm looking at the logo right now. You can Google it yourself. Oh my God, there is a man dribbling a basketball on a trophy, but it's not the Jerry West logo. And yeah, Showdown 82. Great, great idea. Showdown 82 was such a great idea, it had a sequel. Showdown 83, when the Sixers and Lakers met again for the title. These did not take. These did not capture the public's imagination. Brian McIntyre, who was the league's longtime senior VP of communication, said, I actually think it was too closely aligned to what Showtime Lakers and they were in those finals. So Showdown was never going to really work. Another NBA marketing executive said, you need to have your own ultimate event be identifiable, promotable, and therefore ownable. He went on to say, I don't mean to trivialize it, but it's just that the basic needs of a marketing problem are, in effect, this is a new, major new product introduction. At the same time, it was a brand extension of the league that created for me something that was a leap. I thought they were never going to buy this, calling it the finals, but somehow they did. It was a mark that literally spelled it all out. The first logo, the 86 NBA Finals with the Script Finals, or the Script F with the shooting star over the eye, just says the, and then 1986 NBA Finals with the and the finals in cursive or script font. And that's how it was. Sometimes simple is the best. Simple with a little bit of flair, which the script F was. Who is it? What is it? When is it? That's simple. Make it repeatable and ownable. Of course, that persisted. It grew throughout the 80s and early 90s, all through the Jordan years until 1996, when some genius said, we need to freshen this up a bit. So they shelved the script F in favor of a new one. And so that persisted for a few years, from 1996 to 2002. And then in 2003, the Larry O'Brien trophy was replaced on the court by the Dribbling Man or Jerry West logo. Many people were like, hey, what'd you do with that thing? Come on. Didn't last. In 2004, returning to their senses, the NBA went back to the script F, and they soon put both the Larry and the Dribbling Man back into the design. Do people need to be reminded it's the NBA Finals they're watching? Do they think they've stumbled on to the Continental Basketball Association Finals? No. But still, the script F stayed until 2018, when YouTube TV became the presenting sponsor of the finals. So out again went the script F, and back in comes Dribbling Man for 4 years. Well, finally, the league decided to bring back the script F in 2022, and it looks like it's going to stay. The good old finals logo in front of the Larry and the Dribbling Man, and what the league has called a modernized logo. Says the executive for the NBA who invented the script F, quote, at least the finals part found its way back in 22. I'm not the vengeful sort, nor do I gloat, but it was the right thing to do. What's in a name? It's silly, it's trivial, but it actually matters to a lot of people. I like the logo. I like it because it does harken back to really the glorious of the NBA's glory years. And by the way, the NBA is doing just fine. Those who want to squawk, get woke, go broke. Look, the NBA has issues, but the league overall is doing just fine. The numbers for Game 7 of the Western Conference Finals, highest in 24 years. Now, this, of course, is in part because they've changed how they measure Nielsen ratings, but still, it's doing fine. Darren Revelle reports the get-in price just 24 hours before the finals were to begin has come down to somewhat more reasonable levels, at least in San Antonio, not so much in New York. Get-in prices hours before Game 1, San Antonio, $668. That's reasonable. It's expensive as shit, but it's not in the stratosphere. Game 2 in San Antonio is currently at $1,099. That could come down before tip time. Game 3, though, at MSG, $4,476. Game 4 is not much. It's actually more expensive. I would wait to buy Game 4, because Game 4 is even more. $4,781, lowest get-in price currently. If the Knicks are down 0-3, which I don't think they will be, but if they are, trust me, you're going to be able to get that for a whole lot less. To Capitol Hill, testimony today, Wednesday, on Capitol Hill with the Save College Sports Commission, senators grilling executives, former executives for NBC and current Notre Dame AD Pete Bavakwa, as well as former Alabama head coach Nick Saban about what can be done to, quote, save college sports. The rising cost of a college football or college basketball team continues to go up, 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 and it is causing a number of schools to both either take on private equity, which is not going great in some places. Utah took private equity, and now they're laying off a bunch of people. What'd you think was going to happen? And college, and not college sports, but Olympic sports at the college level, that used to be Division I Olympic sports, are being eliminated because they need to save every penny for NIL payments. So here is Nick Saban talking about Alabama's NIL collective and how it went up like a rocket soon after he retired.
Let me give you the history. My first year we had collective at Alabama, 2.7 million. Next year, 7 million. Next year, 10 million. I retired. Next year, 17 million. Next year, 24 million. Now you have schools that have close to $40 million rosters. So if we continue to do that, we're going to lose Olympic sports. We're going to lose non-revenue sports. We're going to lose scholarships. And basically what's going to happen is you're going to have football and basketball succeed, and we'll have club sports for everything else.
And you know what? There's a number of people that say, fine. I disagree with that. I think actual intercollegiate sports for Olympic sports that are not going to produce revenue, that are based in regional conferences, you know, where you can actually take a bus to some of your opposing schools, those are very good and very healthy opportunities, especially if you can throw a bone with a scholarship or a partial scholarly to somebody on the swim team or the track team or the field hockey team. I think those are worthwhile things. But as it currently is headed, those are going to go extinct. Now, Saban can be a powerful speaker. However, many people are saying, oh, you of all people, the guy who is almost certainly, even though you don't admit it, paying players to come to Alabama under the table when it was illegal to do, getting out right when everyone else can do it and the competition is much stiffer. Oh, that is rich. Tweet from Blue Orange Gator, I'm crying, man. Saban became a literal price-fixing communist the second that Hellcats were no longer sufficient to land five-star recruits. Yeah. I understand the tension between the two. Meanwhile, Bavacqua explained the dynamics of if TV networks are footing the bill for all these sports and all these games and the basketball and the football, and they're paying a ton of money, it's not like we don't want to take the money, but once you start doing that, television's going to say, you know what, let's do away with this, let's do away with that. Why don't we create a Super League? And a Super League may be great for television. A lot of ADs do not like that idea at all.
My second concern is if you want to truly maximize the media value around the largest sport in terms of eyeballs, which is college football, I do think the best way to do that is a Super League. And I certainly don't want a Super League. I'm not sure anybody necessarily wants a Super League. Flooding the market, aggregating the market, bringing it to an aggregate form to major media companies, I'm not sure that's going to drive the value. Some say it will. If you wanted to maximize media value around college football, I think you would take 24 to 30 teams, create unbelievably competitive scheduling where a team like Notre Dame would play Alabama, Georgia, Penn State, Ohio State, Michigan, and start to get a number that more closely resembles an NFL number. I could be right, I could be wrong, but that's why I was encouraged that it's a voluntary application and that a lot more work could be done over the course of the next series of years to see if the value could prove itself out.
All right, so I don't know why that soundbite was only in the left channel. I thought I had an efficient way to queue up all this stuff from Twitter and other sources. My apologies. I'm not going to go back and fix it in post-production. It'll be too much of a pain in the ass. So hopefully you lean towards your left car speaker as this came through. Here's the thing about chasing the media dollars. The media landscape is changing constantly and chaotically and quickly. And so while right now there is a definite gold rush for TV dollars, the notion that it's going to continue for 5, 10, 15, 20 years into the future is ridiculous. And it's also dangerous because what happens then when things change or the money dries up or it shifts somewhere else or the model of distribution changes dramatically or perhaps people stop watching as much as they once did for whatever reason. And so the value of that property goes down. I would point to Major League Baseball where the Yankees, the Red Sox, the Dodgers, other big markets were flush with this regional sports network model. Those three teams still are doing quite well, but a number of lesser markets or combination markets like Baltimore and Washington with the Masson deal, the Mid-Atlantic Sports Network, that was good for a while, and then it kind of unraveled. And the RSNs unraveled in a various number of other places around MLB. And now, as we approach a potential lockout in MLB, we could have the owners want to bundle together all media rights. So if this happened in baseball in just in the last 20 to 25 years, there's no reason it couldn't happen in college sports as well. So as you're tearing up conferences and making ludicrous conferences that go from one coast to the other and saying, hey, Stanford and Stanford played Cal in North Carolina in a one and done elimination baseball game, and the loser had to fly home. Ridiculous, right? Well, that's what I think those like Pete Bavacqua and Nick Saban and others are saying. What are we doing here? Or as Taylor Twellman once ranted in the iconic ESPN rant.
What are we doing? What are we doing?
What are we doing? They're chasing the money. And the money is threatening to upend a whole lot of things. Now, I get the people who say, oh, the hypocrisy, such as Reddit College Football, the average P6 head coach in football made $700,000 in 2000. The average P5 head coach made $4.7 million in 2020. So that is a well over 5X increase in 20 years. The consumer price index went up just 50% in the same 20-year period. There were no congressional hearings on this matter. Well, that presumes that everybody should enjoy an increase in pay equally just because a sport is doing well. I would argue a good college football coach is a force multiplier and that the players come and the players go. They are a commodity that flows in a wide and deep river of high school talent, and then they flow out to the NFL, at least a portion of it, a tributary of it, and the rest of them go on with the rest of their lives. A good coach, though, who knows how to wrangle and get the most out of and cajole and to command those 18, 19, 20-year-old young men full of testosterone and head spinning with a girlfriend in college at Ole Miss and Texas and Florida that just makes them go, woo-hoo-hoo, while trying to play tackle football on the biggest stage, the coach that can get those young men to march in a line and pull together for a bigger cause, he's worth 5X. The students, the college football and college basketball players, again, they're like interns. Also, on the what are we doing front, NC State was going to play Virginia in football in Brazil. NC State was going to make $2 million for playing Virginia in Brazil. This was Virginia's game. Now they have said, yeah, never mind.
What are we doing? What are we doing?
The game was going to happen this season, and we are less than 3 months away, and they're like, yeah, nah. So I guess NC State's going to have to pay back the $1.5 million that they were paid for this game. I hope they have it somewhere in a bank account. One last thing about chasing the media rights when it comes to football and basketball in college, but especially football, although they've expanded the NCAA tournament in basketball as well. Who says that the networks have unlimited appetite for more games or unlimited budget for more games? ESPN, which technically owns the entire playoff, college football playoff, has already auctioned off to TNT first round and quarterfinal, and one of the semifinals this year. So if ESPN, the biggest entity in sports with the deepest pockets that owns the most properties, if they are saying, actually I'm full, then that ought to be a warning sign right there. So they're subletting or selling off big chunks of this current 12-team format. And you want to go to 24? People? Okay, Also, have you seen the schedule for the playoff this coming winter? First round games on campus, December 18 and 19. Okay. Then there's an 11-day break as we get through Christmas. The quarterfinals are December 30th and January 1. Okay. Then we wait 13 days to play the semis, January 14 and 15. Are we done yet, Bob? No, we're not, because we'll wait 10 more days to finally play the 2027 College Football Playoff National Championship game at Allegiant Stadium in Las Vegas on January 25th. Absurd. For the last time, what are we doing?
What are we doing? What are we doing?
All right, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm a blackjack guy. Always have been. It's the one casino game where your decisions actually matter. Hit or stand, double down, split. You're not just watching a slot machine and hoping for the best. MyBookie.ag has live dealer blackjack. Real person, on camera, dealing cards in real time. And a full casino beyond that. Roulette, craps, slots, poker, all of it right on your phone. New players get $25 in casino credit just for making a first deposit. Use promo code ZABE. Go try the tables on them. MyBookie.ag, promo code ZABE. Check the site for offer details and to confirm availability in your state. Bet smart. Get paid. To arena news. I'm fascinated by this stuff. I don't know if you are. I'm amazed at just how much teams will say, yeah, this place is getting old. We need a new place. The Denver Broncos building a new stadium. I didn't think theirs sucked and needed to be replaced. Now you've got in Dallas both the Stars and the Mavericks fleeing downtown Dallas for the Burbs. They both want their own stadium. First of all, the American Airlines Arena, I was in it once in 2010 when the Super Bowl was in town and it was early in the week and I had a chance, a ticket to go to the game. And I'm like, all right, cool. It was nice. It was fine. It was perfect. You don't need anything better. But what all these teams want now, and you can blame the Atlanta Braves. The Atlanta Braves broke the mold and created a new template. And that is Truist Park, which has the Battery outside of it in suburban Alpharetta, I want to say, north of Atlanta. The Braves own all that stuff. They own all the kitschy food joints and attractions and everything else. It's a fake little city with restaurants and stuff like that, but the team owns it all. And even when the Braves are not playing there, the Battery is still an attraction if you're a tourist from out of town. What are we going to do today? Well, let's drive up to the Braves ballpark and go to the Battery. They've got an arcade there and a Fuddruckers. Okay, it sounds like a day, honey. Why not? Look, those of us with families know sometimes you're just desperate. You're thinking, all right, we got to fill the days somehow. We said we're going to go to Atlanta for spring break. What the fuck are we going to do? It's a brilliant idea, but now it is spawning other teams basically saying, yeah, we're just a real estate company. Yeah, that also plays basketball on the side or hockey on the side. The Bears, meanwhile, are in a much worse spot. They are having to deal with both the twin incompetence of the Illinois state legislature, broke as a joke, and hopelessly dysfunctional, with the Chicago political machine, which is legendary unto itself. Currently, the Bears are stuck. They could not get approval for just a minimal amount of spend from the state legislature to basically build their new stadium in Arlington Heights. What's crazy is that the state Senate in Illinois had approved funding to give the Bears a little bit of money, a couple hundred million dollars at most. Bears are going to pay all the money to build the stadium. And the Senate said, okay, we can find some money for you. We're broke, but we can find some money for you. And we'll let you create a stadium authority to tax and raise the money to do whatever you need to do. We'll build some roads and infrastructure, blah, blah, blah. You're going to build the stadium. We'll give you a little bit. The Senate said yes, but the House adjourned without even voting on it. And now the next session won't begin for another, I don't know how many months, but it's going to delay the whole thing at least a year. And the Bears really can't afford to wait. They've been trying to get at this for a long time. And they're now seriously considering going to Indiana. Either Gary or Hammond, Indiana, or somewhere down there. Yikes. Good luck on that front, Chicago Bears. To some other NFL news. Couple small items. Nothing big, but there is some interesting stuff. Brandon Ayuk, currently still the property of the San Francisco 49ers. He has not yet reported back to the team. If he does not report by a certain time this summer, he'll start forfeiting even more of his guaranteed signing bonus on his big deal that the Niners should have never given him. Some Commander fans really still want him to be a Commander. I keep saying, why? They can't even find Brandon Ayuk right now. They don't even know what shape he is in. He didn't even cooperate with the team when it came to rehabbing his knee. You really want him? Oh, and then there's the thing about him filming himself on Instagram going almost to 100 miles an hour right past Levi's Stadium. Well, he's now been issued an arrest warrant on a misdemeanor speeding charge from this video, which is literally 8 or 9 months old. Yeah, okay. So there you go. Got up to 106, actually, on the speedometer. Sweet-sounding car, but it's just ridiculous. So if you want Brandon Ayuk, good luck to you there. He still is not reported, and the Niners are not going to do anything in order to accommodate him. They're not going to cut him. They don't have to. They're just going to sit back and watch him burn more of his money. Shout-out, thoughts, and prayers to one Caleb Williams of the Bears. He has landed on the cover of Madden 27. There are some things in sports that are real, and you better heed them. The Madden curse is a real thing. I know the NFL injury rate is approaching 100%. Everybody gets hurt at some point if you play more than 5 minutes. That said, there is way too many instances of NFL players who are on the cover of the video game, and then within the very next year of that happening, something really bad, usually an injury, happens to him. Caleb Williams is pictured over the Chicago skyline with just a simple blue faded background, kind of throwing a jump pass with his legs spread. Some have criticized the cover as being too plain. Others are saying, hey, look, dummies, it's an almost exact recreation of the Michael Jordan Jumpman logo over the city skyline from nearly 25 plus years ago. 25 plus? 35? Holy shit. Yeah. 40 years ago almost. Good luck to Caleb Williams. In Cleveland, Dylan Gabriel has had his number hijacked. At least that's how it appears. I saw these quotes and these tweets. I didn't know if they were real. But now that the Browns have traded for Jarrett Verse, Jarrett Verse wears number 8. He's called V8. Verse, get it? V. He's also very fast as a defensive end. V8. Well, Dylan Gabriel, Shrimpy McQuarterback, currently wears number 8. And the tweets I saw were quotes. I guess I could try to hunt it down and look up if you really said it, but Dylan Gabriel's like, yeah, I guess he just took my number. I was kind of hoping he would pay me for it, but seems like he just took it. This headline from Dog Pound Daily, Jared versus arrival just created an unfortunate, uncomfortable reality for Dylan Gabriel. Brown fans got their first look at the new edge defender, Jared Verse, on Wednesday. He opened practice with the Browns for the first time since Monday's bombshell trade of Myles Garrett. It took about 60 seconds for Browns reporters to notice, hey, wait a minute, there's 2 number 8s on the practice field. I don't see any quotes in this particular article from dogpounddaily.com. There's another tweet about Jared Verse
maybe it's a fake quote saying, yeah, I didn't think I'd have to pay for it. I figure it's going to be available soon anyway. Browns currently have four quarterbacks in the roster. They're not going to carry four. They might have one and a half decent quarterbacks. We shall see. But Dylan Verse looks like he could be practice squad guy, or it could be cut. Either way, I wonder if the team will just go, yeah, yoink. Jared Verse is not happy about being here, so the least we can do is give him his number. You, Shrimpy, sit down. We're taking your number. The Niners have canceled next week's mandatory minicamp. What? I've been told reliably by the NFL media establishment that these are important things. It's the mandatory minicamp. We're going to be there to document what goes on with these players in pajamas, as Lions head coach called it. The pajama party. Dan Campbell. The Niners canceled next week's mandatory minicamp because they had perfect attendance for their voluntary OTAs. Oh, isn't that nice? Micah Parsons will open next year on the PUP list. This after a late season ACL tear, per Rob Domofsky of ESPN.com. The Packers superstar pass rusher will miss at least their first four games. That'd be the Vikings, Jets, Falcons, and Buccaneers to start the season. Then there's this, back to Chicago for one more thing. It appears that Brandon Johnson, mayor of Chicago, believes in the ale theory. Take a listen to the mayor on a radio appearance talking about the traffic situation during the Bears-Packers playoff game last year.
In and out of Soldier Field is an absolute nightmare. Let me tell you how bad it is. Bears versus Packers. I'm at the game. We're losing. I decide to leave to beat the traffic. Before I get out of the footprint, the Bears had come back to win. The ingress egress part, that's what we have to fix. And the other locations, they don't even have the basic fundamentals to do things like the sewage, the weight of that many people coming through there, not to mention ingress egress. They have not even solved what we have already had as established, the ability to actually host large scale events. The only thing that we need for our infrastructure is ingress egress. We need that.
Okay, you keep saying ingress egress. I know you think it makes you sound smart, but it's enough.
Regardless, right? The museum campus as a whole benefits from it. Look, Chicagoans want to watch the Bears in Chicago. Everybody knows that. There's frustration because we did not get complete cooperation when we came out 2 years ago. So here's what I'm committed to doing.
Okay. You're not going to fix anything. The city has not fixed anything in a long time, and there's only so much you can do. The stadium is inconveniently located on the lake. And normally stadiums need 360 degrees around it so everyone who gathers for 3 hours can disperse in an even fashion. Not only is it not, you know, it's bordered by a lake, so you can't just drive off into the lake, but there's a major city with limited highways and freeways to get out of. And then on top of that, you have to walk through a big park just to get to your parking garage or wherever you did park down in the city. It's a romantic notion. Yeah, you want the Bears to be downtown Chicago. It just seems like in today's day and age, it's not going to happen. But back to the larger point, Brandon Johnson is a proponent of the ale theory and left before the Bears came back to win the game. Somebody tweeted, why would you even admit this? It's the mayor. The mayor thinks he's smart. The mayor is something else in Chicago. Who doesn't like free food? I do. Josh Carpenter reports that the FedEx St. Jude Championship on the PGA Tour is now introducing all-inclusive tickets. This following the PGA Championship doing the same. It has unlimited food and non-alcoholic beverages in your ticket price for only $99. He writes, it'll be curious to see if other events do the same. I know that Arthur Blank in Atlanta pioneered the very low-cost concession prices for Falcons home games. That has proven to be popular. And so, yeah, now you've got the PGA Championship, this golf tournament saying, yeah, for non alcoholic stuff, sure. All the hot dogs you can eat, all the sodas and all the chips, all the cookies, come on in, part of the ticket price. It's kind of cool. Makes you feel like you're getting something for something and not being gouged at every turn. To adventurers in AI, Polymarket tweets, just in, scientists say AI has decoded communication patterns in mice, dolphins, apes, birds, whales, even cuttlefish. Researchers believe this could eventually lead to humans communicating directly with animals. Are we headed towards a future in which the dog translator, which is a voice box on your dog's leash, can translate their barks into actual words we understand? And can we talk back to them? But would we understand each other? Because they're just a dog. I think when it comes to our pets, especially dogs, dog owners know what your dog is thinking for the most part, or at least after a certain number of years, you get it. There's a connection that can be had just through a look, just through their eyes, just through their body language. But yeah, I think there's going to be amazing things with AI that decodes, oh yeah, now we figured it out, and it's going to multiply upon itself. So yeah, buckle up for some interesting times. Steph Curry's got a new shoe deal. It's a pretty sweet one, although I've never heard of these shoes. They're Chinese. Li Nings. Li-Ning. N-I-N-G. Not Under Armour. Not Nike. Not K-Swiss. Not New Balance. Not Pro Keds. Not Converse. How many more can you name? I'm going to try to keep going here. Not LA Gear. Not Skechers. Not Puma. Not Adidas. Oh, I'm doing pretty good here, aren't I? Just off the top of my head. The 10-year endorsement deal is worth more than $400 million. Could escalate well beyond that, depending on how sales and stock price of the company goes. Curry was reportedly offered similar numbers from other brands, including at least one worth more, but he chose Li Ning to power the Curry brand. He's going to be huge overseas. This is for a player who is nearing the sunset of his career at, what, 37 years old? Good for Steph Curry. What do you do with all that money? Stat of the day. Get a load of this. I don't even know how to compute this. This is now the 46th consecutive season in which a former teammate of Jaromir Jagr has appeared in the Stanley Cup final. 46 consecutive years, a former teammate of Jagr in the Stanley Cup final. This year, it's Golden Knights defenseman Rasmus Anderson, who played with Jagr in Calgary in 2017-2018. Of course, Jagr's career lasted a long time as well. He played into his 40s, so it kind of is understandable that he would have touched or brushed up against a whole bunch of other players who are still around. But that's a hell of a stat. 46 years. Last one for you. Happy Gilmore has come to life. You remember in Happy Gilmore when David Floyd, the superfan for one Shooter McGavin, Donald Floyd. Did I say David Floyd? Donald Floyd, played by the great Joe Flaherty, whose signature heckle of, "Hey Gilmore, you suck! You jackass! Hey, jackass!" When Donald Floyd decided to take things into his own hand and drive the Volkswagen Beetle and run over Happy Gilmore as he's coming down the stretch for the Tour Championship.
There he is. That worm.
Happy Lagoda! Happy, are you okay?
Volkswagen.
Well, something eerily similar happened at a U.S. Senior Open qualifier. This from MondayQ.com. Ryan French, who created the whole Monday qualifier ecosystem, writes the following. Headline, in the U.S. Senior Open qualifier, an errant tee shot led to a ridiculous series of events. a shattered windshield, a golfer hunting red truck, a costly triple bogey, and a hilarious ace. The golfer in question was Mark Knecht. He was on the 12th fairway at the Miami Valley Country Club in Dayton, Ohio. He hits his shot to the right, seemingly out of bounds, couldn't find it. He then tees up a provisional and puts it in the fairway. A few moments later, he finds out what had happened to his first tee shot. It had hit a red pickup truck who had a cracked windshield. How do they know this? Because the red pickup truck had driven through a gate to the course and was driving down the fairway towards the group. Luckily, and unlike in Happy Gilmore, it wasn't moving very fast. And according to the witnesses on scene, it stopped 10 to 15 yards short of the players. The man climbed out of the driver's seat, did not seem particularly concerned that Mr. Knecht was on his way to a triple bogey that would certainly ruin his chances to qualify for the U.S. Senior Open. He only wanted answers about his windshield. He wasn't yelling, said one player, but he was clearly agitated. The three players, their caddies, and a rules official tried to calm the man down. Nobody was eager to identify the guilty party either. By the way, according to law, established law, you are responsible for your golf ball. You can't just say, well, what can I do? I'm playing golf. I suck. I hit it out of bounds, and I broke your windshield. You're on the hook for it if they can prove that it was you who hit the ball and that the crack in your windshield wasn't there already. But still, the discussion continued for another 3 or 4 minutes before additional rules officials arrived to help defuse the situation and convince the man to return to his truck and to drive off the golf course. Eventually, he agreed. Still trying to process what happened, the group walked to the 143-yard par 3 13th. Playing last, Knecht, who had just tripled the hole, hit what others described as a shot that was perfect and never left the flag. One hop in, an ace. They all laughed when recounting the story. He played those two holes one over par, a triple, and then an ace. He signed for a 76 that included the following scores on his card: a 1, a 2, a 3, a 4, a 5, a 6, and a 7. Knecht learned he still had one more number to worry about, the bill for a new windshield. But still, something he'll deal with at a later date. Happy Gilmore, come to life. Jackass! That's it for me today. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you to Steve Halligan, who hosted myself, and my man Bryant Hatcher. The Cincinnati Flash is alive and well. Along with Steve Foley. Foley and Hatch worked together in the telecom business as sales guys. Mr. Halligan created and built a company that employed a lot of people and did very well and allowed him to be successful. He's sold off the company. He's now basically retired, and he belongs to Caves Valley Golf Club up in Owings Mills, Maryland, and it is so sweet. And he had us out there on what was easily the most perfect day weather-wise we're going to have all year in the DMV. Warm, but not a stitch of humidity, not a bug in sight, light breezes, crystal blue skies, not a cloud to be found. And we had a grand time playing golf, and he is such a generous host. Not only was the golf on him, but lunch afterwards as well. And he insisted, Mr. Halligan, that we get a shirt on his account out of the pro shop. Any shirt we like. I'm like, come on. Last thing I need is another shirt. He's like, nope. It's part of tradition. Get the shirt. What a guy. I'm going to let the fact that he still loves pickleball as much as he does, I'm going to let that slide because he was such a great host and is a great dude. So thank you for that. That'll be it for me today. Thanks so much for listening. Rate and review, as well as spread the word so it tickles the algorithmic overlords. Enjoy tonight's Game 1 NBA Finals with the Script F and the star on the top of it. And tomorrow, on the Zabecast for you 1%ers, you subscribers, $5 a month. Thank you very much. It'll be me, Scott, and Solly with both a recap of Game 1 and I'm sure a bunch of other stuff as well. Thanks for listening. Have a great Thursday, and we will see you next time. The betting calendar is absolutely loaded right now. Baseball in full swing. NBA, NHL playoffs already underway. If you want to get really spicy, you can even bet the WNBA. Look, I'm not judging. Action's action. The question is, where are you betting? Because that matters just as much as what you're betting. That's why I go to mybookie.ag. And why you should too. New to MyBookie? Use promo code ZABE on your first deposit. If your first bet loses, you get a full refund up to $500 back in free play, plus $25 in casino credit just for showing up. MyBookie.ag, promo code ZABE. Check the site for offer details and to confirm availability in your state. Bet smart, get paid.